It's Andy Parks, live from the Washington Times on 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. And it's a pleasure to welcome back to the program one of our national security reporters, Sean Waterman. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Andy.
Muslim uprising opened the gates for Al-Qaeda. That's the headline I see this morning, and naturally it gets my attention. I thought Al-Qaeda was on its heels. Maybe not, though. The president's been telling us that for, quite some time. Not the case?
Well, there's a debate. My article is really about Al-Qaeda's efforts to exploit the security vacuum or the insecurity that's followed the toppling of some of these long-time secular dictators, like Mubarak in Egypt or Ben Ali in Tunisia, who were allies of the United States and kept Islamic extremism, under a very heavy heel. But there is a debate, in the long term, I think everyone agrees that the Arab Spring, that the rebirth of democracy in the Middle East will be very bad news for Al-Qaeda because it creates the political space for their supporters to, try and get what they want peacefully. But in the short term, you have these security problems, as we saw, for example, in Benghazi.
All right. Now, if I'm getting this correctly, in the rebirth of some of these Arab Spring or Arab Awakening countries, there are areas created that are void of government right now, and this allows the passage of Al-Qaeda types to come in and have some influence. Is that what I get?
That's exactly right. They're called ungoverned spaces, and they're a major focus of U.S. counterterrorism officials, because any time you have an area like eastern Libya, like southern Yemen, like the Sinai Desert in Egypt, where, security is weak or really non-existent in the Libyan case, these armed extremists can set themselves up, they can train, they can communicate, they can, as you say, come and go. And that is very bad news, not just for the people in the region, but, one U.S. counterterrorism official said to me, any time these guys have a space where they can plan and train, they start thinking about how to hit Western targets, and especially the United States.
Mm-hmm. Do we now know definitively that the North African cell of Al-Qaeda was responsible for the attack on the embassy in Libya?
We don't know that for sure. There's been reporting that suggests certainly people linked to Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, which is Al-Qaeda's franchise in North Africa. There's intelligence suggesting that people linked to that organization might have been involved in the attack. But we still don't have a definitive answer to that question. Interestingly, though, there is now some evidence emerging that Al-Qaeda supporters in the Middle East were involved in trying to drum up these protests against the video, against the anti-Islamic amateur video that was posted on YouTube. And, I mean, this is, again, this is one of the data points that's quite worrying to some people because, again, it suggests that they are taking advantage of some of this, of some of these security problems. And, quite a lot of people were killed in those protests, actually, when the demonstrators tried to storm the U.S. embassy in Tunis, for example, where five people were killed there. And in Yemen, about the same number were killed when mobs tried to storm the U.S. and I think the German embassy in Sana'a as well. But I do want to say, Andy, that, there is another side to this debate. And, some of the foremost and most respected scholars on Al-Qaeda really think that the group is on its last legs. But and I think part of the difference is, what counts as defeat. Those who say that Al-Qaeda's dead say that its central strategic purpose was to carry out mass casualty attacks in the United States and that it's basically unable to do that right now.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the other side of the debate argue that these franchises and Al-Qaeda's ideology are still very much alive, and although at the moment it may not seem that they pose a threat, they think in the long run, 50 to 100 years, and we can't see past the next election. So.
All right, so I'm trying to get my hands around this. It appears that by what you said, they still have persuasive power, but the strength and the size may be less than we saw before. And if I understand correctly, one of the people you talked to thought that the type of attack we saw in Benghazi is perhaps the best they can do right now.
Well, that's right. And as I say, I think you have to separate Al-Qaeda Central, the group that was put together by Osama bin Laden during the 90s and that attacked the World Trade Center and the Pentagon on 9/11. I mean, that's one group, and they are very much, you know, as you say, those guys are running and hiding. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
However, the affiliates, you know, some of them, because of these ungoverned spaces, are in a much better position. And, you know, for Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, for example, has made a number of attempts to attack the United States, including the printer bomb that was hidden in a cargo shipment and a couple of underwear bombing attempts, you know, both of which were foiled in the end. So to some extent, the threat is still there, but it's much reduced. And I think, you know, in many ways, it is the ideology. It is the fact that, you know, there are groups in places like Libya and Egypt and in Tunisia, too, who are taking up the banner of Al-Qaeda, perhaps not with any direct operational connection to the leadership in Pakistan and Afghanistan, but, you know, definitely taking their inspiration from them.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised when Congressman Peter King, who chairs the Homeland Security Committee in the House, claimed that Al-Qaeda is stronger now than on September 11th?
Well, I think he was making the point that, you know, some of the people that I spoke to for my article made, which is the ideology. When, on 9/11, there was a single Al-Qaeda, you know, this group in Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are perhaps as many as a dozen groups which are either have pledged loyalty to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the new Al-Qaeda leader, or, you know, are followers of the Al-Qaeda ideology. But I've got to say, I think that the congressman has got this one wrong, because whether you agree that they're dead or not, I don't think there's any doubt that the group is in a much worse state. And principally, in the Muslim world, you know, if you look at the brand of Al-Qaeda, has been irreparably damaged in the Islamic world, because the vast majority of the victims of their terrorist attacks since 9/11 have been Muslims, right?
Yes.
So,
mm-hmm.
And the barbaric way that they have, you know, conducted themselves whenever they've had these kind of ungoverned spaces, whenever they've taken control, as they did, you know, in Iraq, when mm-hmm. they controlled about a third of Iraq, or in Somalia, you know, the barbaric way that they've conducted themselves has not endeared them to anyone. So.
Yeah.
He's got a point, but I think he pushes it too far, I'm afraid.
All right, well, keep me posted on any new developments with this story. It's fascinating to me. And, folks, if you haven't read it, you'll want to check it out in today's Washington Times. Muslim uprisings open the gates for Al-Qaeda. Sean, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Andy.
Sean Waterman, Washington Times national security reporter. It is 4:47, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT.